The more you post, the more they're going to reward you. The way that I say it is that you have to feed the beast. These platforms are hungry. They feed off your content. Like, if you don't give them content, they have nothing to give to anybody else. They are dependent on you. So the people that help them the most, they're going to reward the most. Descript does a great job of not only partnering with other creatives to get UGC content, but they also have dedicated creators on staff that are doing tutorials, that are always putting out something, you know, just to help users learn how to use the product better. The idea of flopping should not even enter your mind when you first start creating content. There is no flopping. Creating the content and putting it out is the win. I would say for most folks, until you even get at least a year in, you can't really call anything a flop.
Welcome to the Revenue Rebels podcast, brought to you by Warmly. On this show, we cut straight through the fluff and dive deep into the specific tactics that B2B revenue leaders across sales and marketing are using to find success in today's environment. I'm your host, Alan Zhao. All right. Today we have on Alex Miner. He's a podcast producer, video marketing strategist, and founder of I Am Media. Alex specializes in helping businesses harness the power of video content to reach their dream customers. He has a music background, his past life being a rapper, and he was also an audio engineer. Then he shifted focus to video on social media platforms like YouTube, LinkedIn, and TikTok. So today we'll be talking about video content in the B2B context. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Let's get into a quick background about yourself and then we'll dive into the topics.
Yeah, basically, you covered most of it. I moved down to Florida in 2004-ish to go to school at Full Sail to get my degree in audio engineering. From there, I eventually wound up working in television news for a few years. Then I went into the corporate events industry, and that's where I first picked up a camera. And, you know, dabbling with the camera on my own time, helping my wife out at the time with her social media, and then, you know, wanting to get into music videos and short film and stuff, eventually led me here when I figured out that independent film does not always pay the best, but that businesses have money and a lot of them like content. So two things started making sense, and I decided I'm gonna go that way where I might get a check.
Yeah, it's amazing timing and what this built up into. I can't believe how many people are posting video content these days. So the fact that you've been building up into that, it's really good. It's like really good timing.
Yeah, the thing that I say is, you know, I said this in another interview a couple of years ago. It's like, I've always been an artist. It's just the brushes have changed over time. You know, so started out in music and then, you know, just, or actually started out writing poetry and short stories when I was in elementary school, and then, you know, got into music, and then I get into video and, you know, get hip to marketing and stuff. And so it's me being a creator the whole time. You know, it's just what I create and why I create has evolved.
It's kind of like tech back in the day. Like, people didn't just do tech for a job. They did it for a passion. They went into the tech industry. This is pre-Facebook. And then now everyone is diving in. Similar things happening into video. So why should people be paying attention to video content creation?
Well, if you look at any statistics concerning video and marketing and trends from, I would say, the last 5 years, all the numbers just keep going up. The amount of internet traffic that is video based, the dwell time on websites when you include video, the responsiveness to marketing initiatives that include video, like, all the numbers just show increase year over year. The amount of people who are listening to podcasts, I mean, that jumped up way during, you know what, back in 2020. But interestingly enough, as a podcast producer, the number of new podcasts has fallen dramatically from 2020 because people have less time on their hands. But that means that there's a huge gap in the market because now we have all this new listenership and not enough content to fill the gap.
Even for myself, though, it's difficult to constantly create video content, to create podcast content. It just takes time. And it as does. A marketer, I can't necessarily see the results of doing this for 2 to 3 months versus doing a big product launch, writing educational content. Like, how do I think about this?
Well, okay, so there is no one right way to do these things, right? But to my mind, when you're approaching incorporating video content into your business, it's got to be a long-term strategy. Unless you're doing something like you're a car salesman and you're doing a commercial about your newest sale that's only going on for like a month, video is a long-term strategy. It has to be a long-term strategy to really be effective, because a lot of people think of video in terms of marketing, but you really need to think of video in terms of brand building. Because when you start putting out video content over an extended period of time, that's what you're doing. You're building brand, you're building trust, you're building familiarity. Because what we're trying to do, especially in the B2B context, is to be somebody's first choice. It's like Coca-Cola. It's like McDonald's. It's like 7-Eleven. It, you know, all these household names, quote unquote, they're household names because they never stop. They never stop putting out ads. They never stop putting up billboards. They never stop running commercials. Why? When everybody already knows who they are. It's so that when you have to think of something that they do, they're the first name that you think about. Familiarity is usually what gets people the money. It's the same principle in, it's really the same principle in business as saying, you know, your network is your net worth. Well, McDonald's network is all the people who know the McDonald's brand. That's where they've got over however many billion sold. It's because everybody knows them. And when they need fast food, they know it's not going to be the best food, but they know it's going to be consistent. They've got a great idea of what the product is going to be. So it's an easy choice. I know where my money's going. I know what I'm going to get. And that's what you're trying to create when you're going into this long-term branding strategy that is video.
Do you have some specific examples of B2B companies that have been able to pull off video content creation well?
Yeah, so one app that I think is doing very well, but it's not through creating their own content, it's through getting user-generated content, is Milanote, which I don't know if people who are listening are familiar with Milanote, but it's kind of like a productivity management tool. It can basically be whatever you want as when it comes to like project management, keeping track of creative thoughts and things. It's so flexible. But over the past few years, they have just like, I watch a lot of YouTube and I watch a lot of creators on YouTube, and they have done a great job of partnering with different types of creators to get them to kind of showcase what you can do with the product as they go about their creative endeavors, which is what got me to start using Milanote. So it's working. And so companies, when they think of it like that, Descript, that's another one. Descript does a great job of not only partnering with other creatives to get UGC content, but they also have dedicated creators on staff that are doing tutorials, that are always putting out something, you know, just to help users learn how to use the product better. So Descript's another one. I think more SaaS companies really need to be investing into their video content just to help people with learning how to use the products and becoming more familiar with the features and things. So that's a big market that needs to be doing video content, and a lot of them are not.
Outside of the educational component, is there anything else in terms of how companies should be thinking about their content creation strategy?
Yeah. One thing that, and you'll hear some people talk about this, is creating a media brand, right? Gary Vee has said that companies really need to be turning into media companies that happen to do whatever the business is that they do. And there's a lot of validity in that, because and there's two ways to approach it. It can be like building a media brand that directly represents the company, but there's also building a media brand that's almost a separate entity, but then has callbacks to the company, has, you know, some sort of connection that you know, kind of low key funnels people back towards the company. Because you can even build that media brand when you're thinking of it in that fashion into a complete another business that can do other things, generate income in different ways, that can be a nice add-on to whatever the main business is. But part of it is familiarizing people with that brand, getting them to engage with and love that brand, love whoever the personalities attached to that brand are, because you're creating value as you're building that and as people are growing familiar with it. And so then when that trust is built there and people start, you know, directing folks back to whatever the product is or mentioning it, there's more likelihood that folks will listen because they're already engaged with just whatever the brand value the brand is offering. So those are two ways to go about it. You can have a media brand that's like directly connected to the company, or is the company just in media form, or you can create a separate media brand, which is like its own animal, which may even have completely different values and completely different goals, but people know that it's powered by that brand, or that it's, you know, presented by that brand. And so there's a trickle down effect that happens as people latch on to that media brand and get familiar with it.
That makes sense. Some of the things that I see consistently is that people know who the brands are, but they don't necessarily know what the brands do. And so mm-hmm. you end up creating a lot of content and people know who you are, but it doesn't necessarily convert into pipeline.
You have to make a strategic effort to do that. And so one thing that a lot of people do, and it's unintentional, is they think, you know, the world is telling me I need to create content. All right, I'm gonna start to create content. And they do create content, but they're not reverse engineering the content by saying, what is the goal of the content first? Their goal is, I just need to create content, instead of, this is the goal and content's supposed to get us there. So you got to start at the end and then find your way back to the beginning. So which the beginning is supposed to be creating the content.
Got it. And now that you've created content that resonates with your customers, or, you know, has that commercial insight that you want to show the world, change their mind, change some sort of behavior, the next question is, how do you get reach?
Keep doing it. You're going to build reach over time. And the reason I say keep doing it is because as you go along, you're going to learn things, or you should be learning things. You should be getting more familiar with whatever platforms you're on. You may discover through interacting with your audience other platforms that they want to see you on, that you're not on already. So that can increase your reach, because now if you're going into different platforms, you have potential to build a different audience on that platform. You may figure out better ways to use the platforms you're already on. And word of mouth is still a thing. So especially when it comes to like podcasts and YouTube and Instagram and things like that, is like, as your audience gets more familiar with you, there's going to be that effect of word of mouth where they start recommending it to people, you know, if the content's good, and you're going to get growth that way. So just, you don't stop, you keep going.
That's the thing. I think we were talking about this before. It's difficult to keep going when it's so hard to even just make one single video, and then to post a video on a platform and to see the video flop.
Well, okay. So that's something that we definitely need to touch on. The idea of flopping should not even enter your mind when you first start creating content. There is no flopping. Creating the content and putting it out is the win, right? Like, it's, I would say for most folks, until you even get at least a year in, you can't really call anything a flop. Like, if you're a year in and you haven't seen any uptick in numbers, like, then you might need to retool some things. But it really takes that long and that much consistency, because you got to be consistent to really be able to firmly judge whether things are working or not. I mean, the absolute minimum is 3 months, right? Like, you can't start any sort of media campaign of this fashion, you know, trying to build brand on something and not give it at least 3 months of consistent output to work. So this doesn't mean just 3 months of creating content internally and not releasing anything. You know, you put out the first video and say, well, I've been working on these videos for 3 months and this first one sucked. Like, no, you have to have 3 months of actually getting the content out there. And that may mean you're 6 months in, because you might spend 2-3 months creating a backlog of content before you even put the first piece out. And that's hard for a lot of people to swallow, especially if they're taking their own time or if they're investing in creators internally to create this content. Like, because that's another thing, another big mistake that I see a lot of people who want to start a brand make is they're too impatient. As soon as content gets made, they want to put it out. It's like, no, if you want to be able to build consistency, you have to take some time at the beginning, invest time in just building your process, invest time in actually finishing some content so that you've got a lot of it sitting ready to go before you launch. Because if you're always playing catch up, you're going to burn out fast.
That makes sense. Is there something with the algorithm that rewards people who post daily and consistently as well?
Yes. Most of these platforms, if you're, the more you post, the more they're going to reward you. The way that I say it is that you have to feed the beast. These platforms are hungry. They feed off your content. Like, if you don't give them content, they have nothing to give to anybody else. They are dependent on you. So the people that help them the most, they're going to reward the most.
Can we talk about the nuances between each platform, like LinkedIn versus YouTube versus TikTok versus Instagram in the B2B context? Yes.
People have different behaviors on different platforms. And so when you're first starting, I recommend deciding on one that you really want to get good at, and then maybe a second one as a backup. And not that you should ignore the second one. You should still be trying to put out plenty of content on the second one, but your priority is whatever the first one is. And you learn everything that you can about that platform. You get really good at it. You study it. You watch tutorials. You do all the things, build up your knowledge so that you get really comfortable with that platform. Once that you've gotten really comfortable with that platform, then you can start to shift some of your focus onto the second one. And the reason that you really want to have at least two platforms is because one may go down, like Facebook and Instagram did the other day. You know, and it's not the first time that's happened, right? So you want to have a backup, and eventually you want to be building up community away from those platforms so that you're not beholden to them. Right. And that may mean an email list. That may mean investing in a community platform like Mighty Networks or one of these other ones. I mean, even a Facebook group. I wouldn't recommend a Facebook group because, like we said, Facebook just went down the other day. So something away from the big social media platforms where you can build, where people can talk. That might be one of your what's the software that everybody's using to have these groups on now? It could be a Slack group. It could be a Discord. That's it. That's exactly what I was thinking of. Could be a Discord that you build up so that you have somewhere away from these mainstream platforms where you can start building community, connecting with people, and having more conversations and breeding more familiarity. Now, when you start doing that, you really got to baby it. You really got to pay attention to it. A lot of people start these things and then they don't really nurture it. And so they think it doesn't work. No, there's strategy and there's knowledge involved in building a community. And if you don't know it, either study it or hire somebody that knows how to build digital communities to manage it for you.
If you're a fan of the Revenue Rebels podcast, please leave us a review on Spotify and Apple Podcast. Your support goes a long way in helping us bring on more amazing guests. Thank you. Community is one of the most powerful tools for the B2B marketer. That is a whole nother conversation that I'm sure we can have a separate episode on, but I totally agree that there's power.
Yeah, community is like having an active community is like having permanent pipeline.
Who goes out and gets more pipeline for you.
Exactly.
They're aligned. Are there any other tips that you would recommend people do for platforms like YouTube? Maybe it's first 3 seconds matter, the headline grabber, small things like that that you'd recommend.
All those tropes that you hear about video content, like, oh, you gotta worry about your thumbnails. You gotta worry about your titles. You gotta worry about the first 3 seconds. It's true. It's true. Attention spans on social media and on these digital platforms are short. It's not that people won't watch long content. It's that they don't trust that is going to be worth it, especially because there's a lot of garbage out there. So you really have to upfront let them know that it's going to be, or show somehow that it's going to be worth their time, because they're so quick with the scroll. I mean, I am too. And I like long form content. I like spending, you know, if a video is not at least 10 minutes, like I'm kind of like, you know, I like long stuff. But I also like short form content because it's so easy to consume, which is why most people like it.
Do you have a strategy for short form versus long form and when to do which one?
I think that you should be doing both at all times, especially because short form has become such a dominant force in today's market. When you're approaching your long form content, I think that you should be engineering your long form content to be broken down into shorter form content. And the reason I use the word shorter form content instead of just short form content is because there's, yeah, the term long form is very broad. It can cover a wide range of stuff. I mean, some people think that a 5-minute video is long form. I don't consider that long form, but some people do. I tend to consider anything long form, anything that's like 10 to 15 minutes or more. So when you're creating that longer form content, you try to build it so that it's easy to cut up, break down into longer things. So let's say you do a podcast and the podcast is an hour long. Well, don't just publish the podcast. So we'll break down a whole tree of stuff that you can do with that podcast. So, and we're going to assume that it's a video podcast. You publish the video to YouTube, full length podcast. Then you take the audio, you publish it to your podcast platforms. Then you come behind that full length video that you published and you say, these 3 5-minute segments in the podcast were really insightful. You publish those 3 5-minute segments as separate videos. Then you go back through the content and say, all right, we had some great one-liners or great, you know, zingers in this, great insights. We can get 8 pieces of short form content out of this episode. Boom, 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 boom. So right there, you've gotten 12 videos out of 1 hour long conversation, or actually that's 13 counting the original podcast. So that's 13 pieces of content right there. That's not even counting the Twitter posts or X posts that you'll make. That's not even counting, because each of those pieces of short form content can go on each of those social media platforms. So it can be a YouTube short. It can be an Instagram post. It can be an X post or the beginning of a Twitter thread. You know what I'm saying? And then there can be a newsletter that goes out. There can be LinkedIn posts. So from that 1 hour long form piece of content, if you're going into it with that in mind, you can have 20 to 30 posts that go out onto your various platforms and social media and whatnot from one conversation.
Yeah. The next question is, once you put all that stuff out in the B2B context, especially, it's hard to imagine that a lot of the content that you push out will go viral. So what should the overall strategy be?
To not go viral. Don't care about going viral. Listen, we're in the business world. We're B2B. Like, usually that means we're specialized. That usually means that whatever audience you grow is going to be a smaller audience compared to the internet at large. The possibility of going viral is that much smaller. And usually going viral requires putting out an insane volume of content for one to pop off. So when you see people like Grant Cardone going viral all the time, when you see people like Gary Vee going viral all the time, when you see some of these creators that aren't business related going viral all the time, it's because they put out insane amounts of content. Unless you got your own team, Gary, you're probably not putting out that amount of content. So stop worrying about going viral. It's worry about putting out whatever to you is a good, large volume of content, the largest amount of content that you can manage without it negatively impacting running your business and without it driving you crazy.
And with the goal that the content seeks to inform, it's directed towards your audience.
Right. You want, because the thing with virality is when stuff goes viral, it means that a bunch of people who don't really care about you had it show up in their feeds. That's what going viral means. It means it got enough attention quickly enough that a bunch of people who normally wouldn't pay any attention to you had it show up in their feeds. And it was interesting enough that they watched. But the majority of those people who watch the viral content are not your customers. They're not the type of audience that you're trying to cultivate. They're never going to show up in your inbox. Now, you may get more of those people showing up because you've just been spread to more people in general. But the majority of people that viral piece of content got shown to are never going to be worth anything to you. So going viral should not be the goal. Creating content that resonates with the people who will actually pay you money or who will connect you to people who will pay you money, that's the goal.
Is there a metric that you look at or some way to measure the success of the content overall?
Yeah. So there should be audience growth over time. And that can be modest audience growth. I think a lot of people, as long as it's going up, I say you're doing the right thing. As long as the numbers are going up, and that may be going up, you know, in terms of a few more subscribers every month, it may be, you know, a certain number of you over time, you start getting the average number of likes or comments starts going up. It's really audience growth over time and engagement over time. When you're first starting out, getting any engagement, and when I say engagement, I'm usually talking about comments and DMs, you're winning. When it comes to just view count and likes and stuff like that, those metrics matter, but not as much as people actually trying to communicate with you. Because making a comment on a post or a video, that's communication. That's real effort. That's valuable. You know, somebody showing up in your inbox or your DMs, that's communication. That's real effort. That's valuable. And if the content that you're making resonates enough that people want to actually communicate with you to put in that extra effort, it means you're doing something right. So that should be your number one metric. Other things can branch off of that, especially if you start creating the content in a way that it like is directing people to other content, if it's directing people to your website or to sign up on an email list, those can start to become metrics that you use to measure success. But initially, when you first start, engagement is the win.
Let's say that you don't want to do all the content creation yourself. You want to bring on like a head of content. What type of person would you be looking for? What would the JD look like? And maybe who are some of the top video creators out there that you admire?
I mean, there's tons of good creators out there. And if you ask me for any of their names, my mind is going to go blank. But the type of person that you want to look for is a creator who is really a creator, and which means having more than one creative skill set. So you're not just a videographer or you're not just a video editor. You've probably got like one major skill set, and then you've got some other minor skill sets because of what you've been through, what kind of background you have. You know, maybe you also do animation. Maybe you also do copywriting a little bit. Maybe you're great at, YouTube. You actually know YouTube strategy and things. And what's really important is when you hire a creator that they have some business knowledge. They know how to look at things through a business lens. They're not looking at things purely from a creator standpoint of, is it cool? Is it pretty? Do I like it? You know, those sorts of things. Because you hire somebody who's a pure artist, they're always just going to be, they're going to be a slave to their artistry. You want to hire somebody who is an artist, but they're also tuned into the business world, because your conversations are going to be different. You're going to be able to talk to them about, you know, marketing or branding initiatives and how it is that you're trying to have that affect the company. You're going to be able to talk to them about the audience that you're trying to cultivate so that they can create they can start creating content with that audience in mind, like asking questions about what is it that you want that audience to do? What does that audience care about? You know, what kind of things classically get that audience to respond? Because a creative who is like, who is not like a creator, and I'm sorry if I'm confusing anybody with trying to make that distinction. So when I say creator, I'm talking about somebody who's kind of like used to making creative decisions and business decisions on their own to like move, you know, to build their brand or move it forward, as opposed to a creative or specialized worker who is an order taker. Now, you want somebody who can take orders, but you also want somebody who's going to bring ideas to the table, can take initiative, you know, help elevate those conversations and look at things from both sides. Look at things from the artistic side, but also look at things from the business side, because you make different decisions when you have some of that business knowledge base. And when you can have those business discussions and they make sense to you. Because when you're purely an artist or you're purely an order taker, a lot of stuff the business people say to you is going to sound stupid because it's not pushing the art forward. But we're not doing art for art's sake. We're doing art for business's sake.
It's kind of like hiring founders versus hiring employees. Hiring a founder with the founder mindset, you want to push the needle and deliver results, not be part of the process.
Exactly.
How can people find out more about you?
LinkedIn is a good place. I've kind of been taking a little bit of a break from LinkedIn, but I'm itching to get back to it, you know, just trying to get my mind right in the new year and create some more content and, you know, work on some personal development stuff. You know, that's what the cool kids do these days. So LinkedIn is probably the best place. You can look at my old content. There's tons of it. I've created a lot of content over the last 3-4 years, and you should be seeing some new content soon and me further cataloging my adventures.
I'm really excited for the new stuff to pop out. Thank you very much, Alex.
Hey, I appreciate it, man. Thank you for having me.